Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise your teens and parent your 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, here with my co-host and partner in crime, Judy Davis, and we cover a wide variety of relevant topics, and what we like to do is get real and raw with other parents and experts about the things that parents of teens and 20-somethings really need to know. And we have not only the podcast, we have more for you at mightyparenting.com, as well as past episodes. So pop on over and check that out. But today we are digging into mental wellness because January is Mental Wellness Month, and this is something very near and dear to our hearts as well as our guest. And for decades, it seems like there's been all this hype about exercise and nutrition and wellness checkups and all these things that we can do that we're told will keep our bodies healthy. And now we have all these headlines about mental illness. But my thought is, if exercising and eating right helps us to stay physically healthy, doesn't it make sense that there are things that we can do to stay mentally healthy? And I'm just figuring, you know, mental wellness is not just something you have or don't have. It's not an accident. It's something that shouldn't be taken for granted. It's something that we need to be aware of. We need to pack it and we need to take care of it.
Yeah, right, Sandy. You know, I love the fact that we're exploring mental wellness and the things that impact it and what we can do to not only keep our kids mentally healthy, but keep ourselves mentally healthy. You know that this is something that I speak on, especially to the military community. I do a lot of work with mental health and mental wellness and stress relief and things like that. And I really believe that having a discussion about mental health in this way is so important because there is such a stigma about mental health and getting care and treatment for our emotional well-being. Like that's, there's something wrong with that. And that stigma just bugs me because it is no different than physical health. Both of them work so hand in hand, which is why I am thrilled we are bringing back and having Anne Douglas join us for this important conversation. Anne is an award-winning parent writer and the mother of four children who have struggled with a variety of psychological problems, and they're all thriving. We were able to talk with her just a little bit beforehand and kind of hear a little bit about her holidays with all of them, and it was really kind of neat to see. If you don't remember, Anne joined us on episode 36, where she discussed parenting through learning disabilities, behavior problems, and mental health challenges. And so we're excited to have her back with us today. Thanks for coming, Anne.
Oh, I'm so excited. I felt like last time I was visiting with old friends, and that was the first time I'd ever talked to you. So I'm really looking forward to more of that today.
Yay. Yeah, we've been very excited about getting together to work together again. We were looking for an opportunity, and like I said, you know, when Judy and I were looking at going, oh, January is Mental Wellness Month. What do we want to do? And we're like, we want to talk to Anne and we want to just share some ideas with people about what is this and why do we need to care about this? Because, you know, what does it have to do with parenting? How do we deal with this with our kids? Do we need to deal with it for our kids or with our kids? Yeah. And there's so much here that I think what I'd like to do with the two of you is start out with each of us just sharing a little bit about like our own thought of what is mental wellness? What does that even mean?
Maybe so, I'll dive in since you were kind enough to invite me out this joke.
Yeah, you go first, Anne.
Okie doke. So when I think about it, almost like we're looking at sort of like a bar graph. And on one end, there's sort of like mental illness. And on one end, there's mental wellness. Most of us are sort of sliding somewhere along that, almost like a dial where you're not going to be at 100% perfection, and you're not going to be hopefully at 0% totally depleted. You're going to be somewhere in the middle. And so what we want to do is keep sort of budging the needle along in the healthier direction, recognizing that sometimes things will happen. Life will throw us a curveball. We'll get bounced back a little bit and we'll go, yikes, if I'm at 40%, maybe I need to be nudging that up again, that kind of thing. So I sort of think like sometimes we have a feeling like some people are mentally well and other people are mentally ill. And I don't think it's that at all. I think we're all on that continuum.
And I think it goes hand in hand with self-care. Yes. Yeah. I tend to lump it into with self-care because to me, mental wellness is the act of making sure that your mind and body connection is so strong that we're physically and mentally able to handle and manage our lives, right? Just like you're saying, Anne, sometimes we have to manage a lot more than other times. And so mental wellness has to fluctuate because sometimes we need a lot more to fill up our batteries and to give us that strength to get through certain seasons of our lives.
Yes.
And it's similar for me too. I have a tendency to get frustrated with the idea that, and you may have even noticed me talking about this, of calling one mental wellness and the other physical wellness, because our brain is part of our body. Mm-hmm. And it all goes together. And so many of the things that we would do under quote unquote physical wellness also affect our mental wellness. But when I think of mental wellness, I think of how we feel, how part of that physically, like our energy levels. I think of our emotional state and well-being, of just our ability to think and function through a day. And one of the examples I tend to go to of thinking of just not having a great mentally well day are when you're sleep deprived. And as parents, everybody's had the opportunity to be sleep deprived. And so that to me is a great way to think about, oh, that's not a great mentally well day. And there are lots of things that can impact it. But Anne, like you said, it's this continuum. And some days are worse, some days are better. It's not just a matter of something you have or you don't, you are or you aren't.
Right.
And just that concept that we do have control and we have power here, and we have the ability to also teach our kids that they have control, that they have power over the way that they feel and the way that they function and their emotions and their well-being.
So I have to ask, you bring that up, Sandy, and I'm thinking back to when my kids were growing up and all the different times that they needed different things. And I never looked at it as mental wellness. And I'd love for the two of you guys to kind of bring that up about what is it about mental wellness in our kids. We are so focused from the time they're little on their physical well-being. What is mental wellness for our kids? The concept is so foreign to me as a parent. It wasn't until my kids were in crisis, when my son was in crisis, that I really looked at mental wellness as something that I needed to, that should have been being dealt with from the time they were little.
So Judy, what does mental wellness look like in our kids?
Yeah, I think so, but and maybe I'm getting really off in the weeds here, but it's, why are we so focused just on our kids' physical wellness? And almost the mental wellness is secondary to that. And only do we think about it when we have issues, does it come to the table?
Well, yeah, kind of like, so it used to be that way with physical health, right? We didn't think about diet and exercise and nutrition and magnetic fields and eye strain. We didn't think about all these preventative things. We didn't think about maintaining health in our bodies. We only looked at something's broken and we need to fix it. And I think that's kind of where we are with our mental health still at this point, is until it breaks, until somebody is actually depressed or bipolar or having an anxiety and panic attack or dealing with ADHD or whatever, until there's something quote unquote broken that needs to quote unquote be fixed, we don't really pay attention to it. And then we kind of panic because we don't understand this realm as well as we understand the more physical issues.
Something that is popping in my head is, this is Anne obviously talking in the background here, is that sometimes I think in our culture in particular, we love some emotions and we don't love others quite so much. So, you know, if your child is happy and joyous and bouncing around the room, you're thinking, oh, this is great, I love being a parent. But if you have a child who's angry and throwing things or having a fit or crying all the time or, you know, colicky baby, all that kind of stuff, it brings out such powerful feelings of discomfort in us that we sometimes have a tendency to sort of quench some of those emotions in kids and see parents saying things like, don't cry, honey, or whatever, or just trying to say, you know, you have nothing to cry about, those kind of messages. And most of us are far beyond that because we've been talking about this stuff for a couple of decades, but it amazes me how my gut reaction when one of my children is having a hard time is make the problem go away. And then I have to stop and say, no, my child really needs to learn how to feel anxious or sad or whatever, and to know that they can come out the other side. So I think just being the kind of family that can talk about and process all kinds of emotions. And I mean, I'm somebody who specializes in the anxiety. So in my family, we talk a lot about anxiety because I'm usually freaking out about something and, you know, I guess I'm just like a living project for my family. So there you go.
And I think you hit on something really important, Anne. I think that as a whole, we don't identify and manage our emotions and our feelings in a healthy way. I think we are so used to, as a culture, stuffing our feelings if they aren't convenient to a situation. And then all of a sudden you build it up. I liken it to a file folder. You know, I have an emotion that I'm not able to allow myself to feel or do, and it goes into a file folder. And every time I feel that emotion, it comes stronger because I'm accessing that file folder, and all of a sudden it's going to just blow. Mm-hmm. And if we can teach our kids and ourselves to experience an emotion when it happens, allow ourselves to feel it, and then manage it, either do something with it or let it go. Yeah. It's that simple, process of allowing ourselves to identify a feeling, allow ourselves to experience it, and then make a choice whether to take action or let it go, then we're able to be more emotionally healthy because we're allowing ourselves to experience feelings and emotions. And I think that's where mental wellness trips us up as individuals.
Yeah.
We stuff our feelings and we don't allow ourselves to experience emotions that aren't acceptable to those around us. I think you're really onto something with that.
And I think we all have our own unique little vulnerability things. Because what I've learned, you know, like after you study yourself for 50 years or whatever, you get really good at noticing patterns. And one thing that I've noticed in myself is that I can cope really well through a crisis. It's like, you know, I'm on the adrenaline train and we're getting through this thing. And then as soon as the situation starts to ease up and I get like at that moment of relief, that's when I kind of fall apart. And so I think like everybody has their own pattern. So for some kids that, you know, when they're feeling really anxious, maybe they get angry, maybe they get withdrawn, any number of different things can happen. But now that I know that's my pattern, I can say to myself, it's okay. Like this is just the emotions releasing, saying, okay, the emergency is passed. Now you can like kind of feel tired, go sit on the couch, have a cup of tea. So I think just being the kind of family that can talk through some of those things and help our kids to know that your response is different than my response. And what matters is you just figure out what your strategies are for helping you, because you're wired a little bit differently than me, although as humans, we all do have some stuff in common.
Well, I like that idea, Anne, of noticing patterns and noticing our own patterns and noticing patterns in our kids. Because I want to tie that to something else you said that I think is extremely powerful. And you talked about this idea that when our kids are experiencing something that brings us discomfort, that our tendency is to want to make that discomfort go away. And the natural knee-jerk way to make that go away is to make our kids stop experiencing that emotion. So as Judy said, we end up teaching them to stuff it because we don't want to deal with it. We don't want that discomfort ourselves. Whereas I think part of that is we can notice those patterns and we can say, oh, okay. So when my child is feeling this way, they tend to do this or they tend to do that. Or when something happens, you know, I tend to go through this cycle and then I have a hard time dealing with other people's emotions or whatever it is. I kind of chuckled when you talked about yours, Anne, because my husband and I have noticed that just as a couple, we work through a crisis together extremely well. And what we've had to learn to watch out for is that time right after the crisis. Because both of us, I think, are just starting to process what actually happened. We don't take the time to manage those emotions or accept those feelings or process any of that while whatever's going down is going down.
Yeah.
And I think that we cut each other more slack during that time.
Yeah.
But just to say, you know, hey, yes, it's done and we're both going to process. And to notice that pattern, but then also accept those uncomfortable emotions. Because the pair with that is, oh, okay, we didn't deal with those emotions. And maybe we didn't take the time to help our kids deal with all those emotions during the crisis.
Yeah.
So let's take a step back now and deal with it. So ladies, how do we deal with those emotions? Because that's where we're coming from right now is we're going, okay, our mental health is tied to our emotions and how we feel. So when there is an uncomfortable emotion, how do we deal with that? Judy, you started on that.
Well, I think we have to, not only for ourselves, but I think for our kids, we have to identify what it is we're feeling. I think so often we have an emotion and we don't dig in deep enough to figure out what it is we're really feeling. It's really easy to go, I'm feeling stressed. You know, that seems to be the blanket, or I'm tired. I'm tired is a better one. When you say to someone, how's it going? They go, I'm tired. Well, what is that? What does that mean? Because tired can be the catch-all for a multitude of different feelings. And unless you get down to identifying the actual emotion that has the power behind it and gives you that actual feeling, if you can't identify what is truly going on, you can't manage it. I think that that's the key. It's tired is not it. You know, so when someone says, I'm tired, what do you mean by that?
Yes.
Are you anxious? Are you stressed? Are you this? Are you that? Get down to the simplest form. What does it mean to be tired? What does it mean to be anxious? What are the thoughts going on in your head? Because my guess is the first thing someone says when you said, how are you feeling? The first thing that comes out isn't truly how they're feeling. And I think that's why mental wellness is such a challenge, because we don't know how to identify what we're truly feeling. And if you don't have the facts and you don't have the clues, you can't find the tools and strategies and support to move through those emotions. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think also not talking yourself out of those emotions, because sometimes you might think, you know, I'm mad at my kid or I'm mad at my relative or whatever. And then you'd think, but I shouldn't be feeling that way. And you try and talk yourself out of it. But you know, I think it's like doing what you would want to do for your child in a situation where your child comes home and they're feeling really upset. They just want to know that that emotion makes sense. So you validate it for them. So you could sort of like self-validate your emotions. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, I'm feeling anxious. And that anxiety makes sense because my to-do list has spiraled out of control because everybody came back from the holidays and decided they were going to do a month's worth of work in 4 days. Thank you.
Have you been looking in my mirror, Anne?
I feel like I've done more work in the first part of 2019 than I did all in 2018.
And I think creating the space and taking the time to be with our kids as they go through something, or to let our kids see that we're taking the time and the space to allow us to feel something. If we feel sad, sit down and cry about it, or just sit with them while they're crying about it. Don't try to fix it for them. Don't talk to them about problem solving it. Just let that emotion release. I remember working with Jude Bijou, and emotions are her area of expertise and her specialty. And she talks about it as energy in motion. Emotions are energy in motion. And so crying or yelling or being angry, or when we're fierce, you know, you can shiver and you can shake, that actually releases it. But in this busy society, that I think that's what triggered the thought, Anne, you know, we have no time. We can't stop and take time to just sit here and cry or shiver or yell or whatever, you know. Who has time for this? We need to just push it aside and move on.
Yeah.
And like Anne said earlier, those emotions are not welcome sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so we stuff them, you know, we push them aside because it's not acceptable. So
I'd like to say validate and welcome our emotions, no matter what they are.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we validated it. We went, okay, that's fine. And again, this goes to both sides of it. So, you know, our kid comes home or they wake up or whatever, and there's this uncomfortable emotion and we go, hey, it's okay to do that. I think the next step, Judy, you talked about experiencing the emotions, and I just kind of alluded to that. This is not, I think innately it was a natural thing, but we've all been taught differently. We've been taught to suppress them, to not show the emotions, to push them aside, or to not take the time, whatever the reasoning. I think we've lost the skill for experiencing them. So how do you guys experience emotion? Like, what does that even mean?
I'm just smiling to myself because I'm realizing that when I was a kid, I was brilliant at getting my emotions out. I was the kid who cried all the time whenever something was sad, you know, read a sad novel, cry, watch a sad movie, cry. And I remember my grandma once saying, it's just a movie. It doesn't just feel like a movie. It feels like the end of the world. So I think I was a very emotionally open child. But as you get older, the world tells you, you know, put a lid on that. But, you know, as a 55-year-old now, I'm sort of opening up a little bit more and thinking, you know what, if something really is unfair or really sad, it's okay to express that emotion. That's being human. It's not a sign of weakness. And you know what, now I'm going to sound really feisty, but I think if we had a few more people around boardroom tables, maybe crying a little more often, we'd be in a much healthier world.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. You know, we don't allow ourselves to experience emotions for a multitude of reasons. And I think that one is we don't take the time, we don't have the time to stop and allow ourselves to feel anything. We now go from 0 to 100 in microseconds, you know, we have so much information coming at us all the time, as do our teens and our young adults, that how can we even know what we're thinking and feeling? Because 2 minutes later, we've got something else we're trying to absorb. I think it comes down to we have to disengage from some of the technology and start having conversations like this and having conversations with ourselves, but we need to make space in our lives to allow that to happen. I think we can't even get into the discussion of the how-tos until we make space for that allows us to experience an emotion.
And when you mentioned technology and that, Judy, it reminded me that we have so many pacifiers available to us that we allow to soothe us in the moment rather than actually dealing with that emotion. It's easy to, you know, pick up a book or take a drink or surf your phone or do your email. There's always a distraction of some kind that we can use to take us away from feeling those uncomfortable emotions.
Well, it's easier to be numb. I think that all of the things we're talking about, the distractions, those kind of things, just helps us be numb to the world. And we need to kind of restart or reprogram ourselves to allow ourselves to experience emotions and feelings. I think we don't do that. I think we're so numb to everything because we're bombarded all the time with all of these thoughts and exterior input into our lives. And I think that it just disconnects us from our emotions and our emotional well-being. Yeah.
And I remember times in my life when I was really, really anxious and also really, really overloaded. And the only relief I could see was diving into a sea of carbs. And I ended up like gaining over 100 pounds through self-medication in a really unhealthy way. So whenever I hear that phrase you were using earlier about stuffing down your emotions, I literally was doing that. I was like putting crackers and bagels on top of my emotions and trying to keep a lid on them.
Mm-hmm. It's easy because I think we get fearful of our emotions because we have not from the time, you know, we were younger, we haven't allowed ourselves to look at emotions as a healthy part of life. Mm-hmm. We decide these emotions are good, these emotions are bad. And if I feel these bad emotions, then I need to stop feeling them. And that's where you get all kinds of things. Like, and you're, you know, preaching to the choir here. I get you. Carbs are my kryptonite. Actually, sugar and gummy bears are my kryptonite. Yeah, it's that same thing. I have to be very careful of making sure that I allow myself to feel. Otherwise, I am stuffing. I am going to prevent the world and become isolated in my own feelings because I feel like the world won't accept them. And I think that's the key to mental wellness, is learning how to express our emotions in a way that makes us feel validated. And isn't that what everybody's looking for anyway?
Right. Yeah. And our families should be the first place we can do that. I'm kind of, if real quick, just because I talked extensively in our New Year's resolutions episode about, I also can dive into food and eating, but the other thing is that we can also use other things, because the other mechanism I use is reading, but it's still an avoidance tactic. So if what we want is to be able to feel these feelings, to experience them and let them go, and that's the why, right? Why do we want to feel them? Because it is uncomfortable and unpleasant. And I go, well, it's not fun. Why would I do this? You know, hitting my thumb with a hammer hurts, therefore I stop. But feeling our emotions is a different thing. This is about allowing something to leave us, right? And you said, Judy, it's a healthy part of living. And with that idea of validation, I'm thinking, okay, I can see our families becoming the first safe space. So I'm envisioning these conversations where we start opening up. A lot of families will do, you know, high and low around the dinner table. What was your high today? What was your low today? So maybe taking that a step further and saying, you know, I had this high today and it really made me feel like this, and talk about the pleasant and fun emotions that you felt. and I had this low today, and this is how that made me feel. And to just be sharing that and being that role model for our kids of going, oh, one, I'm not the only one who feels that. The kids don't think they're the only ones who feel these things. And two, it's okay to talk about them.
And that a typical day is made up of a mix of different emotions. Like, I mean, you might have felt devastated or frustrated beyond belief at lunch, and then something great happened in the afternoon. And so that's like now a transient emotion that's fading into the background.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think as society, we have come, and I don't want to blame social media, but I think it's a contributing factor, that we believe that everyone but us is happy. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, like you both said, it is a roller coaster. There are moments of happiness and there are moments of sadness, not only in our lives, but in our days and in our hours and in our minutes.
Yeah. Well, and happiness is the holy grail, right? How much, how many studies, how many headlines, how many things do we see about the pursuit of happiness and being happy and what does it take to be happy and who is happier? And then to have that social media piece that makes it look like everyone but you has it amplifies that. And the truth is that the happiness pursuit doesn't make us happy.
Yeah. And so what do we do about that? You know, I think we've done this great thing of kind of setting this picture. And now I go, okay, what actions can I take? What are the tips that I can do?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jude.
No, go on.
One thing that we haven't touched on, I mean, we've all said, hey, you know, our bodies are a body and the physical and the mental things go together. And the thing that we don't have a lot of tools for is a lot of this around emotions. But I also want to point out that even if we have the tools, it becomes very difficult to manage our emotions if we haven't been taking care of our bodies, if we're not eating well, if we are not hydrated, if we are not sleeping. So those are actually core mental wellness strategies, is taking care of our basic physical needs.
Yes. I mean, there's even so much research to say that if you're sleep deprived, that over time you are automatically skewing negative. You interpret things more negatively than they are. Your emotions are negative. So your day is so much harder. And I know parents are now going, great, just tell my child that. Send them an email message saying, please sleep. Your parents need help. I realize a lot of this is beyond your control at certain stages of parenting. But what you can do is when you do have a friend who says, I want to help you out on a Saturday afternoon, you go, yay, I will be in the back bedroom with headphones on and earplugs in and see you in a couple of hours when I, you know, when I catch up on a little bit of sleep.
Right. And I, you know, when our kids are babies, everyone comes, the troops rally and support us and give us all the tools we need to raise that baby. And I think that as a community, we could do a much better job of giving support as our kids get into those teen years. I find that it was as challenging as having a newborn.
It's not just you. When I was researching my new book, I actually came across a study that said that moms of preteens need support at least as much as new moms. Because when you have that cute, cuddly little baby, it's like, oh yeah, this is hard, but he's so cute. When that teenager may not be quite as cuddly and is maybe saying they hate you, or they're sort of expressing their emotions in all kinds of other ways, you could feel like, great, not only am I feeling uncertain, but my child hates me for the effort. You know, it can be really demoralizing. So you have to have those other people in your court who say, you know what? It's not just your kid. You're not a bad parent. It's just a stage, and we will maybe live through this together, fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so support groups. And again, I think we get more isolated as our kids get older.
Yes.
The parents aren't as involved. I know when my kids hit high school, the school had almost an invisible wall there to parents, that we no longer want you helping out and being present in the same way you were before. And in many ways, that's good and right. I mean, the kids need to be stepping up. They need more autonomy. We're a generation of, you know, helicopter and tiger and overparenting parents. We need to give those kids space. So that might be actually an opportunity to go, okay, so what can I do with other parents or with my friends or whoever it is? Maybe it's your family, but to take a little bit more of that time and be doing self-care and support for yourself, and particularly, again, to supporting other parents when there is an issue. I real quick, we talked about sleep, and I just wanted to say there was a study, there have been studies done, and they show that sleep problems can actually raise the risk for some psychiatric disorders. So again, it goes to that place of, you know, taking care of ourselves, taking care of our kids, taking care of our families. And Judy, you had mentioned, it's been a while now, but you had mentioned that you'd seen on social media, there were two people who posted on the same day. Somebody was sick with a physical illness. Somebody else said they were sick with a mental illness. And everybody rallied around the person who had the physical illness. Mm-hmm. The person with the mental illness, they gave verbal support, but they didn't show up with meals. They didn't say, what can I do to help you? There wasn't that
full. There was an undertone of judgment also that was there for the person that was talking about having their, it was an anxiety thing they were dealing with, and it was debilitating, and it was triggered by something, and it was just this whole, oh, just, you know, it'll pass. It was almost dismissive more than anything else. It's not that people were, it was very dismissive. And it was disturbing to me in that I think in general, we are, as a whole, are much more tolerant of anything that isn't associated with mental wellness and mental health. I think people feel that that's a private thing. It's a mind thing. And I believe that the only way that we can get in front of it and really and truly empower people to be mentally well is to stop judging and actually be honest in our conversations, not only with our kids, but with the other moms and stuff. We parents, and I'm saying this personally as well, it's really easy for me to talk about all the awesome things my kids do when they do it right. And I tend to be a little more introverted when things are not going well. And I think we need to talk about both, because that's the reality. And when we network with other parents, as our kids get older, it's not about the realities. When you're talking to a new parent, they're talking about how breastfeeding isn't going well. They're talking about not sleeping. They're talking about all the problems and looking for solutions. As our kids get older, now our kids' behaviors and actions and things are somehow a reflection on us. So we don't put out there the challenges. So we set ourselves up to not get the help and support we need. And when our kids are older, it is more about their mental health. And that's what we're taking care of as parents. We don't make that shift from taking care of them physically to taking care of them mentally. It's like two different sets of parenting skills. Am I making any sense?
And especially knowing how to sort of like be autonomy supportive with your child, to know that if they're a teenager now, maybe you want to take a step backwards and allow them to sort through some of this stuff on their own so they can build the skills and the resilience. And, but of course, for you, as we talked about earlier, it's like deeply uncomfortable because you hate to see them feeling so sad about the breakup or whatever, but you can't just wave the magic wand and make that pain go away. Like, that first breakup is brutal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
So what I'm hearing us say is that mental wellness is, it's part and parcel of us as a human being, and we need to pay attention to that. and some of the things that we can do to do that for ourselves and encourage our kids to do and lead by example is to eat, sleep, and stay hydrated, to make space and time in our lives to experience our emotions and acknowledge them and accept them and truly to experience them, and to allow and create support networks for ourselves as parents, and to make sure that we are allowing our kids to learn resiliency. I don't think we think of resiliency as a mental wellness issue, but that's exactly what it is. And we've talked about that in many different ways on many different episodes of the show. So we have lots of tools and techniques for doing that. Are there other pieces that I've missed here, ladies, that we need to touch on?
No, I don't think so.
Seems pretty complete to me.
So, well, I want to thank you both for doing this roundtable with me. It's such an important area of our lives, and it is one that is harder to discuss. And I'm glad that we're doing our part, and that our kids and our, in my case, my spouse has given me permission, and you guys have gotten permission to discuss our family's challenges so that more people can get more comfortable and we can move past this and we can get to the point where, you know, discussing how to deal with depression or anxiety is no different than discussing how to deal with the flu or discussing how to deal with bipolar or manic depressive episodes is no different than how we deal with, you know, a broken leg or a cancer treatment, and that all of this can become just part and parcel of our human experience in a very socially acceptable way so that everybody can get the support that they need. As a mighty parent, you know, we know that you are here because you care about your kids, and we want to make sure that you know that you have that support through our community, through mightyparenting.com, through our Facebook group. Judy mentioned at the beginning that Anne did another episode with us, episode 36, where we discovered her book, Parenting Through the Storm, and the challenges of parenting through various behavioral and mental health issues. And Anne, you have a new book coming out, which is only going to be for sale in Canadian bookstores, but also online, right, for the rest of us?
Yes, and anybody who's always wanted to grow up to be a Canadian parent, it will help you get started on your journey if you're not Canadian. But that's not actually the purpose of the book. It's basically a guide to being the happiest, healthiest parent you can be, so that in turn you can raise the happiest, healthiest kids. And you'll notice I did not say blissfully perfect or anything. The parents I interviewed for this book have had any number of struggles, big and small, but what they wanted to do was to share some strategies that worked for them and their families and that might be helpful to other people too. And I guess I would say the biggest thing is the book is also really a call to us to rebuild the village in a meaningful way. I think sometimes we treat parenting as a personal problem you're supposed to solve on your own, when really it's a collective responsibility and opportunity that the entire community should embrace, because this is the next generation of citizens and that's where our future lies.
I love that. And we're going to have a link to both your books in the show notes for today's show at mightyparenting.com. And we just want to thank you all for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Be sure to hop on over to mightyparenting.com to see all that we have for you. And remember, you are a mighty parent.